Welcome to the HC Insider Podcast, a podcast dedicated to the commodities sector and the people within it. I'm your host, Paul Chapman.
My name is Laura Berger, and I lead the European Liquid Fuels and Chemicals Practice at HC Group, a global search and talent advisory firm in the commodity market. I am truly honored to be sharing the stage today with two incredibly influential women, Carol Howe, Executive Vice President of Trading and Shipping at BP, and Alice Acuna, Executive Vice President of Trading at CEPSA. It's no secret that our industry faces significant challenges when it comes to addressing gender disparity. Within the commodity trading sector, women account for roughly 25% of the overall workforce. That number becomes much, much smaller when it comes to trading and origination roles. While we know that there's no overnight fix, it's paramount that we continue to raise awareness and discuss the ways that we can work together on creating a more balanced, gender-diverse talent community. And we're here today to do just that. But it can't be women having this conversation. In order for this to become a reality, we need everyone to be part of the journey. So thank you. I see a number of kind of our male leaders here today joining us for the conversation. Sven Voswalker at BP, number of the global crude and products trading VPs, a few gentlemen from CEPSA, the leadership team from HC. We need everyone to promote change. So now, to get things started, it would be great if each of you could share with us kind of an overview of how you got to where you are today. Carol, can you kick things off?
Of course.
No pressure.
No pressure. No, I was just thinking, gosh, yeah. So I've been in the industry for 3 decades. So yeah, fairly long time. I took a slightly different route in. I actually decided to go management trainee course. I'm an A-level leaver. So I joined a different company to BP, one that Alice knows well. And I did rotations there. And actually one of those rotations was into trading. And I went to night school and I studied accountancy. So I actually started on the trading floor in the finance function. And then gradually over time, I've worked through operations, I worked through doing exposure management, hedging, I worked through Singapore, Houston, Chicago, oil, gas, and spent more of my time getting more involved in business strategy. And then I was in a role, having a fantastic time actually, doing Emily's role. damn, Emily. And then I got... would you like to go and be chief of staff to the then CEO, Bob Dudley? And I must admit, it was a little bit, oh, do I really want to? But then I realised that, you know, I did still have aspirations and ambitions. And if I wanted to one day run the organisation that I've been part of for such a long time in BP, 24 years this year, that actually I needed to step out of my comfort zone and I needed to get broader exposure. And so I did that role. And then subsequent to that, I ran shipping. And then during 2020, I took on trading as well.
Fantastic.
So, simple.
That's all it takes.
There we go.
Alice, what about you?
Well, that's hard to compete with, but let me try. I'm Paraguayan. I started my career in Shell, which is the company that Carol was referring to before. And I started as an analyst at the refinery. And I was the first woman there, which was very interesting. I was 22 at the time, and it was me and 80 men. Yeah, that was a lot of fun. So my first contribution to Shell, and they never say thank you to me for that, was to implement a female toilet. Yeah? And let's just be clear, this is 1996, not 1896. So from there, I work in various different parts of Shell. I work in road transport distribution. I run aviation operations. I work in M&A. I work in lubricants manufacturing and commercial roles. I also work in strategy for a few years. And then I ended up in trading. So I didn't learn all of the things that Carol did. So I went into trading straight up. Yeah. So, and it was like, what is this? What am I doing here? I was running supply and products for Europe. And there are some very dear colleagues and friends here today. And I had to learn what was exposure management or all of those very strange terminologies that we use in trading. I also did a stint as a middle office head, because if I use COO, some people understand one thing. If I say something else, some people understand other thing, but it was pretty much middle office and setting up risk and line of defense one activities. And that was during COVID. So again, it was a lot of fun because I never saw any of my team members for 2 years. And finally, I ended up in Singapore running the LNG trading business for Shell. And then CEPSA called me last year with a very, very exciting opportunity. CEPSA, as you know, is implementing a strategy called Positive Motion, which moves or is aiming at really transforming the company into a green energy company. But what I thought is, let's go and work at a smaller company and see if we can contribute to what they are doing a bit faster. Yeah. So that's why I'm here, and it's a real pleasure. I have always admired Carol, so sitting next to her is fantastic.
Wonderful, and I think, you know, we've now got an overview of all the different roles and global perspective it takes to get to these seats right here. But I guess one of the first steps and one of the first barriers to entry is, how do we attract women into the industry in the first place? I think we've seen two very different kind of career paths as well to kind of get there. A lot of it, I think, we see from a recruitment perspective is that there's a focus on recruiting from, you know, largely male-dominated career programs in the first place. So I guess for trading and origination specifically, Carol, do you think that we can broaden the programs that we do recruit from and the degree programs in order to have a more diverse talent pipeline in the first place that we're recruiting from at the university level?
Yes, we need to. We must.
Yeah.
And, we were talking some stats earlier, Alice and I, and one of the stats, I think it's a Bloomberg stat, is that only 5% of the leadership of the top commodity traders are women. 5%. So, you know, you think we're starting from a pretty low base there, right? I mean, you know, there's Alice and I, and we were talking about Tracy at Exxon. And,
yeah.
But I do think we need to broaden the diversity. I think we know that it makes good business sense. So we need to do that. And therefore, we need to broaden the way that we recruit. And I think there are several things that we've learnt as BP. One is around breaking down barriers. Some of it's around social mobility. So getting out and engaging people earlier, and some of it could be through scholarships, it could be apprenticeships. We do the school leaver program. Obviously, I'm very keen on that because I never would have joined. Yeah. I wouldn't have been able to join the industry because whilst I'm a qualified accountant, I don't have a degree.
Yeah.
So I do think we need to think differently about this, and it's around capability and talent. So I think we're looking to see how we can get a better cross-section of engagement across society. But from a degree perspective, yes, we're also looking at broadening our requirements there, thinking around, okay, what type of degrees? We're looking at people, you know, you don't need to have a maths degree or an economics degree. Actually, we've had people, our previous CEO, he was, I think it was medieval art. You know, some and really interesting people from music backgrounds or, you know, that there's really, you know, it's about people's thinking about the capability, about how they can put different pieces of information together and come up with a solution or come up with an opportunity. So it's how do you think differently about that? And I think one of the things we've actually started doing as well is particularly in the UK and the US, where we're going for experienced hires, we've also changed some of the language. So now it's more inclusive around equivalent experience as opposed to specifying a certain degree. So we're doing that. And I mean, talking about language, one of the things we found as well is some of the job descriptions were actually, you know, the language used in it just meant that women would be looking at it and thinking, well, this is obviously written
for a man.
Yeah. Or indeed the requirements on there, we would put all of these essential requirements. And as a woman, we look at essential requirements and go, we don't have 10 out of 10. Now, I mean, that's obviously part on us, but I think part on the way that we write job descriptions, because are they really essential or some of them nice to have? Let's get really clear on the core requirements for the role and then, you know, change the language around that. So we've done that as well. I think holding DE&I events and, you know, thank you to HC and to BP and CEPSA. we need to do more of this. We want to engage more people. We want people to understand, you know, what a career path could look like in trading. Because also, let's face it, if you don't see the role models, then you don't think that there is that career path. And it's a long journey. And I think, you know, we're looking at it at many levels. From an early talent perspective, we're now 50%, but it's taken us a while to get there. And of course, you still need to then retain those people because, you know, the great, fantastic women in this industry are then highly competed across the rest of the industry. But a number of things that we need to do, but we absolutely need to think differently and broaden where we're looking and how we use language and inclusivity to attract women into the industry.
No, absolutely, and we see job descriptions all the time that have exactly that, and I think there's that statistic that women only look at 10 out of 10, if they hit 10 out of 10, and men will look if they had 6 out of 10 things, and then just say we can figure out the rest of it along the way, and we're not necessarily wired that way, so I'm glad you brought that up. And I think with the school leavers, the amount of time that, you know, we're at interview stages with businesses, and they see a fantastic CV and say, but this person didn't get a bachelor's degree, but they've had 25 years of experience, relevant experience in the industry. And so I'm really glad you brought that point up, because is it then at that point really necessary to have that university degree? So it's very fair points that you brought there. And I guess, Alice, what can we do, you know, to reach students earlier? I went to business school. I never learned anything about undergraduate, anything about kind of the commodity trading industry. We only learned about kind of a few key events. What can we do to kind of attract people and show what a career path can look like, and maybe look at any misconceptions that people may have and kind of competing against industries like tech to bring people into the commodities world?
That's a great question, and one that I grappled with since I joined trading. And a few learnings for me were, first of all, trading is still seen as a black box. Yeah, it's like fairy dust and things, because the industry has been quite close. Yeah, and for me, one of the things that we can help with is demystify trading, what trading is, how it works, and what capabilities do you need to be able to be a trader, yeah? And creativity is one of those, is the ability to be comfortable with a certain amount of risk. One of the things I did in my previous company was to bring people in at a very young age, even at 17, about before they go out of school, to do a few rounds at the refinery, but also at the trading floor, to help understand what do we do. And it's all about value chain and creating value out of the flows that you have, regardless of the product or the commodity that you are working on. So for me, that was actually quite helpful. CEPSA has specific programs for students at about the same age on a program called Challenging You. And there are a number of different activities that are being done in CEPSA, and I know BP, Shell, and others also have. But for me, it's mainly the companies going out into universities, into different, even high schools. Yeah. Because what you also have is a complete misunderstanding of what the industry does. So it's about openness, it's about really showing what people can do. And for us as leaders, is also to show that it's no longer a very aggressive place. Yeah, and I believe firmly in collaboration. And of course, we need to continue to compete. But one of the things that I find seeing female traders is that in many, many cases, they are more able to find solutions that will be win-win for companies and actually make the cake bigger. Yeah, yeah? Because with the energy transition, there is so much that needs to be done, and there is so much value that we have to create, because investments are going to continue to be required to be able to solve the massive problem that is the energy transition. So those are my thoughts.
No, I think that's very valid. And I think what we've seen here is that, you know, having different backgrounds, diversity of thought is going to be so important to kind of develop on the traditional fueled side, but also really important in kind of, you know, bringing forward the energy transition piece as well. And I think that brings me to kind of the next question on this topic is, you know, we've talked a lot about kind of recruiting at the degree level and from different programs, but what about kind of engaging those who are maybe in other industries already? We see, you know, financial services, they recruit from all different types of degree programs, from liberal arts schools, from business schools, from engineering schools. Carol, do you think there's scope for engaging women who are already in other industries and parallel industries and bringing them into the commodities industry, and how do we do that?
Yes. I do think we need to do that. And you know, people can come through different paths. As I say, I mean, I came through a finance path and then into trading. That other people will come through banking, financial services, and indeed, as BP, that's an area that we're looking across as well. And, you know, we have women on the wharf where there's a broad swathe of activity. So it's not just us in trading, but trying to meet with other folk in different areas on the financial services side to maybe look at, are there the capabilities that are transferable? Because I think it's about transferable skill sets. To Alice's point, you're looking for the skill sets. You're not looking for you've traded X commodity for Y years. You know, you're looking for that thinking, that curiosity, that view around risk appetite, that you know, being able to connect, as I say, disparate sets of data. So what we want to do is encourage more of that. So we've been doing more outreach. Then, of course, it's how you bring those people into the organisation, because you don't want to bring an experienced hire in and say, right, you are now a junior and sitting on the bench, and you've got 3 years before you can qualify. So we need to think also a lot more, I think, flexibly about how we bring those people in. Now, of course, we need to give them the right support and programs, because they are going to build on that capability and develop those skills in the energy sector. So we do need to do that. And I think for us, it's making sure that we have that outreach, that we can actually dispel some of the myths. I mean, you know, when we get to Q&A, and Alice has mentioned it, you know, around that there's a different vibe on the trading floor than there was when I started back in the 90s. I mean, it is very, very different. I'm not saying that we are perfect, but I am saying that we are much better, and we're continuously evolving in that space. So I think it's dispel some of those myths, do more outreach and engagement, think about how you bring those experienced hires on. Think about how you then retain them. It's one thing to bring somebody in. Mm-hmm. We all know it's another thing to retain them. But I think also seeing role models in the organisation. So at the different seniority and the different roles across trading and shipping, you know, if people see those role models, then they reckon, well, actually, somebody looks like me has achieved that. There is a career path there. So I think that's important. And men as allies is equally as important, because you need everybody to be committed to supporting women coming into the organisation and thriving in the long term. And I think in BP, we've done a lot of work. I mean, the BP leadership team now is 60%, over 60% female. These are fantastic statistics, but also just very good business sense. And it has made a difference. We, of course, want to see we can do the same in the trading organisation. So making progress, still a lot more to do.
Yeah, no, absolutely. And I think there's, you know, a lot of studies that show that diversity at kind of the top level has a direct impact to the bottom line of the business. So it does make perfect business sense. You talked about retention. I think that brings us really nicely kind of into our next topic. You know, we've spoken a lot about bringing women into the industry in the first place, but the prospect of a long-term kind of career and career growth is often one of the most difficult topics. I think, you know, one of the most consistent conversations that I have with women in the industry is about kind of the divergence of career paths between men and women after having children. And, you know, there is, for the most part, across many organizations, a serious lack of support for working mothers, which is a term I don't really like using in the first place, because no one ever says working fathers. So let's amend that. So if we look at, you know, for working parents, what can businesses do? Because I think, you know, we see a lot of careers for men accelerate at exactly that point in their careers, and for women, unfortunately, plateau, and in some cases even take a step back. So what policies can businesses implement, and what programs can companies kind of put out to better support working parents to balance kind of having a family and maintaining career growth? Alice, I'd love to hear your thoughts.
Well, I have two kids. Yeah, they are now 25 and 22. Yes, I had them when I was five. Yeah.
Miracle.
Just so we are clear. So I grappled with that because I moved to London from Paraguay when they were 4 and 1. Yeah. And I think that there is a level of accountability of you and your partner to start with, because the dual career is very hard. It's not impossible, but it's very hard. So I think the taking the accountability first is very important. Then nowadays, particularly in Europe, there are policies, government policies, that already support flexibility. In CEPSA and in Spain, we have quite a lot of flexibility for working parents. I was having a very interesting conversation with one of my traders, because in Spain, you actually can take 6 weeks of paternity leave, yeah? And you can have another 10 weeks on top of that to be able to help your partner, which is quite unusual if you think about it, yeah? And CEPSA, of course, provides that facility. And he was saying, yeah, but how can I do that? And I said, well, you go and take it. That's, it's not more difficult than that. So I think from a policy perspective, and in companies like BP, CEPSA, or in general, the companies that are trading at scale would have policies that are helpful for parents. I was also surprised in my previous company, sometimes traders or people working in trading saying, oh, I don't know if I can do this or that. And I would say, have you checked the policy? Because I think you actually can do that, yeah? So for me, there is quite a lot that has been done already, both from governments but also from companies. In some cases, it's also about fear from the person to actually do it. So it's not an easy answer, but for me, the policies are there. Sometimes the culture is also what prevents people from actually taking some of the advantages that you already have. And that's where, you know, leaders can help. And in general, people on the floor as well, in saying, well, actually, you shouldn't be connecting for on this call. You are on paternity or maternity leave, you know, or you are on holidays. So for me, it's a combination, and it's very easy to say, oh, we need a policy. And because sometimes even when you have a policy, people don't take the opportunity to do it. So those, again, are my thoughts.
No, I think it's very fair, and it's instilling that kind of culture as well. Yeah. And I think, I mean, those policies that CEPSA has are fantastic. I think there's a lot of companies who only very recently brought in 2 weeks of paternity leave, and it leaves a lot of the onus on women, flexibility. We often talk about, well, we offer this flexibility for women who have children. What about for men who have children? Why don't we offer some flexibility there as well? So it's I'm sure we could spend hours and hours on this topic alone. Yes. But Carol, anything else kind of that you see BP doing or that BP are doing?
As Alice was saying, I mean, there's a number of policies that we have around, you know, it's maternity leave, obviously paternity leave. We do child leave. But also, I think, you know, some of us are getting older, and then there's also the aging relatives, and it's looking after family. So there's lots of different combinations. And so we do want to make sure that, you know, there's a number of milestones that we all go through, is making sure that we've got policies that support that. But I think to Alice's point is, you have the policy, but then people need to know what they are. Mm-hmm. I think, you know, sometimes there's a bit of complexity, or people just don't know where to go. So I think, you know, get educated on the policies, know who you can speak to if you're unclear, and that's whether you're a leader or whether you're a person who's interested in utilising one of those policies. And then it's about, and Alice's point is a great one around, you know, not connecting with people when they're out, but I think that there's also a piece around, particularly I think for women, because there's the, you know, what's been coined the motherhood penalty. But I think for women, when they're looking to come back into the workplace, is to actually connect with them before that happens, you know, it's got to be a mutual decision. You know, you don't want to be calling up saying, are you ready for, to talk yet? But, you know, having the conversation around when are you thinking about coming back? You know, what are the opportunities? Coming back into the same role? Is it coming back into a new challenge? And making sure that they feel still connected to the organisation. And we've had in the past, I mean, you know, some senior traders go off on maternity leave and they tend to drop by the office every now and again at their choice just to say hello and stay connected. So it can be done. But I think also it's making sure that, you know, it's easy to make the little jokes. Oh, yeah, off on childcare. Oh, having another one. But, you know, let's face it, those sort of things are what we call, you know, it's bias. Yeah. And maybe it's not egregious, but it is bias. Yeah. So those are the sort of things as well we've got to sweep out of the culture, because they do make people not want to take that because they're afraid of how they're going to be perceived. It's going to impact their career. So a lot more to be done, I think, on the cultural piece, and leaders have a huge part to play in that.
Yeah, no, absolutely. And I think it's having that kind of judgment-free zone. And at the end of the day, you raised a fantastic point. I mean, I think we're all humans. You know, you can be sitting next to someone all day, but you have no idea what's going on in their personal life. And if they do need flexibility for whatever it may be, actually allowing them to have that without any judgment, without any kind of sly comments on the side. And I think kind of to your point with working mothers, I don't have children yet, but I can imagine if, from speaking to a lot of people, you know, you also don't know what you're going to want to do after you have a child, and having those conversations with businesses and, you know, being able to check in with a company and see, you know, what do things look like afterwards. And some may want to be ready to go right back into the same role. Some might want to do something a little bit different at the time. And it's companies allowing that flexibility, but allowing the individual to make that decision as well and having a say on their career path. Again, we could spend hours on this topic alone, but I think, you know, we spoke a lot about culture here, and you know, I think fundamental to attracting talent is giving women the opportunity to grow their career and ensuring that there's kind of a culture to be able to support that. What can leadership teams, and we've kind of touched on it, you know, just brought it up there as well, and do to kind of, you know, not just develop a more inclusive culture, but really, you know, give women the comfort that they can thrive long-term for 20, 30, 40 years kind of in their careers? What can leadership teams do to help support that, Carol?
So I think, I mean, you mentioned at the beginning as well, in terms of it's great to see so many men here today, because we can't do this alone. We all need to be able to work together. And I think, you know, there's the BCG study, which I think said it was 96% of companies that have men as part of the DE&I agenda will make progress. Whereas if they don't participate, if they aren't engaged, if they aren't leading and supporting, it's only 30%. Yeah. And let's face it, we all make up the environment that we work in. So we all need to demonstrate leadership on this and create the right culture. So I think that's important. I think, you know, we've got men as allies. We actually call it men as allies in BP. It's employee-led. We have it in trading shipping. They're absolutely fantastic. Understanding the challenges that women face on the trading floor or in career paths, and trying to promote more equity and thinking a little bit more in conversations, whether that's advocacy for careers or succession planning. So I do think that that's a really important part. And then I think as leaders, I mean, we've got to set the right culture. You've got to set the tone. And we've done a lot around, you know, promotion of tools and training around, you know, what is bias, unconscious or otherwise. How do you have inclusive conversations? What are the things that you need to look out for in the organisation? So there's a piece around culture. There's a piece around accountability, though. We've got to hold ourselves to account. It's not enough just to talk about this. We have to take specific action. And that specific action needs to close gaps. We need to deliver against it, and we need to hold ourselves to account. So there has to be hard, substantive progress. And that is something that we all need to take accountability for. But we also need to then call out the bad behaviours. Part of it is around training. So we provide employees with, you know, there's a learning offer at the moment, which is around courageous conversations, which is around how to think about inclusion and bias. Because I think on the majority, people don't say mean to be malicious. People have got sisters, mothers, daughters. You know, they don't want them to be in an environment where they'd be treated badly. So I think part of it is training, but then I do think also it's accountability and calling out when that behaviour crosses the line.
The HC Insider podcast is brought to you by HC Group, a retained search, intelligence and advisory firm focus solely on the global energy and commodity sector. With 6 locations across Asia, Europe and the Americas and over 50 consultants. To find out more, go to our website, hcgroup.global. There, you can also sign up for our HC Insider content for more interviews and white papers on relevant trends and talent impacts in the commodities world.
You know, one of the things you mentioned there about allyship and kind of learning is also having a space to be able to ask questions, and not everyone knows how other people will feel about certain topics and discussion points and kind of ways of addressing things, and having that space, obviously thinking about what that question is, but having that space to be able to ask those questions. And Alice, probably one of the most challenging questions this morning. You know, we've spoken a lot about how these policies and what we can do to kind of create, you know, this kind of movement and promoting women within the industry and bringing women into the industry. What can we do to kind of ensure that those kind of policies and those programs are really kind of lived values rather than kind of just written on a piece of paper? And I know we've touched on quite a few of things today, but we'd love to hear any other thoughts you have on that.
Thank you. I think the point that I would like to add is around purpose. Yeah. CEPSA recently did an assessment in a report called Green Molecules and the Workforce. And one of the very interesting findings of this, and this was within a very specific population, particularly towards young people, 18 to 35, and the common thread was purpose, yeah? Trading is linked and generally seen as the place where you go and make a lot of money. But one of the reasons that we found why people and women do not join trading is because they don't see a purpose in it. So for me, that is quite significant, because that's true not only for trading, but for many other industries. I mean, young people, and particularly if you go to engineering schools, any science-based school, and in general, young people below 35, they do not want to come into the oil industry. They do not want to come into the energy industry, let alone coming to the trading industry, because nowadays money is not enough. So for me, one of the things that we need to do much better as leaders is to actually be able to connect the why do you do what you do. And when I joined trading 8 years ago, I was also wondering the same, because I came from completely outside of trading. I had all of those preconceptions. Oh my gosh, I'm going to go into this place full of men. They only care about money. They are really rude. And why do I want to go there? Yeah. And then when I came into the industry, I actually found that you do get some of those, yeah. But they are slowly disappearing, particularly when I am the boss. Yeah. <It's> really. So, jokes aside, it is actually moving on, yeah. But the one thing that we are not yet able to do really well is to provide purpose. And in the end, purpose is a very personal thing. I moved to CEPSA because I wanted to do things faster related to the energy transition. I work in the energy industry my whole life. And my daughter is now in a trading development program at another company. And the fact that I had her wanting to join the energy industry and trading, for me, is a win already, you know? It's only one, yeah. But is a win. So for me, it's about purpose in the end. And of course, we can put as many policies as you want. And as Carol says, there is a lot that companies can do with training, because knowledge and putting aside the ignorance and the understanding will also allow us to get where we need to get. And trading, without trading, make no mistake, the energy transition will not happen. Because unless we generate enough profit to fund the amount of investment that is required for the whole energy system to move, it's not going to happen. So we need every single person, and we need really good traders that will join the industry, men and women, to support where we need to get to. And I think then we will get there.
Yeah, absolutely. It's about kind of, you know, you can make the most change and impact kind of from being within the BPs, the Shells, the CEPSAs kind of the world. So it's a very, very valid point. I think, I mean, we could spend hours here. We've chosen kind of three key topics to cover, and there's many, many more. But before we move to the Q&A session, any kind of closing remarks, Carol?
I think, you know, to Alice's point, I do think, you know, we talk about the energy transition, and I think that the point around purpose and also requiring profits to invest in that transition is key. But I think also being able to rewire the different systems. Mm-hmm. You know, people do think of trading as just the profit on the money, but actually I know so many of our people are deeply involved in figuring out how do you rewire these systems? And every country is going to be at a different stage in that transition. So we still want to give them heat, power, mobility. How do we do that and still decarbonize? Mm-hmm. So we're in the business of solutions and making money through those solutions. It's not, you know, we won't pretend otherwise, but it is about solutions. And I think, you know, somebody once said, you know, what advice, you know, would you give to people? And I think stay curious, keep asking questions, because I think that's how we're going to get to these solutions. And I think it's around the connections, the collaboration that we can make in the office, the diversity of thinking that's going to help us generate those solutions. And it's also constant evolution. We need to all continuously be thinking around markets are evolving, culture is evolving, environment. How are we evolving with it as well? But, you know, I think it's an absolutely fantastic business. I love it. I've been in it for decades. Lots of wonderful experiences, but I've learned so much and I continue to learn every day. I didn't think when I started that I was going to have to start, you know, understanding about electrolyzers and battery storage and offshore wind auctions. And, you know, it's amazing the things that we are a part of. And I just think it's a fantastic business.
Yeah, fantastic. Alice?
Well, I guess just one build on what Carol was mentioning, and is optimization. Yeah, what trading and traders do really well is to find value in the tiniest movement in the market. Yeah, that's an optimized and rewired, as Carol was saying. But I mean, we just need to look at what happened in the very unfortunate events in 2022, yeah? When Europe found itself with an energy system that was basically directed from one side to the other and no ability to shift it, yeah? So for me, that's also quite important, is to think of the additional side of trading, which is the optimization, and which is the fact that during the war, it was the traders that actually help governments find different ways of operating. So we have a very important role to play. I don't consider myself a trader, because I never traded, actually, yeah? But I consider myself a leader of traders, and I'm very proud of being one. So I hope after today, whoever here is not in trading, you will think about joining either BP or CEPSA, and we have more sunshine than
Oh, below the belt, Alex. Can't compete with that in London.
Oh, very fair. Well, you've heard it. No, thank you. Thank you both so much for your insights. It's been, I think, you know, very, very short, but I think very influential discussion. I found it refreshingly honest, which not all of these conversations are, so thank you very much for your views, and thank you to everyone at BP, at HC, and the Connaught for making today a reality, especially to Julia Manuel and from BP, and Emma Ramiskate from BP, who's taken on the role of event planner alongside her day job for the last few months. So thank you both so much. And a big thank you to all of you for joining us today. You know, we've come a long way. We've got a long way to go. And I think this is just one more step in the right direction. So thank you for being here.
Thank you.
Thank you for listening. If you enjoyed this episode and want to support the show, please give us a positive review on Apple Podcasts or Spotify.
To find out more about HC Insider and HC Group, a search and advisory firm dedicated to the commodity markets, visit our website at www.hcgroup.global. There you can find out more about our services and our offices around the world. There you can also find more content, from interviews to insight pieces to more podcasts focused on the commodity value chains. Thanks again for listening.